you're about to say goodbye to a position you were appointed to in late 2009. So I imagine from the top some bittersweet feelings today.
Yeah, absolutely. This is my last week at EPA. It has been such an honor serving President Obama, who I think has made environmental protection and fighting climate change a real priority for his administration. So I am leaving behind my wonderful professional staff at EPA Region 2. I think what some folks may not realize is the political appointees step down when there's a new president in office, but over 99% of the EPA staff, the career civil servants, stay in place. And so their work is going to be more important than ever before as we are facing a new administration that has a different set of priorities than the Obama administration has had on environmental protection and energy issues.
And we'll cover those in just a moment. But looking back on your term, as you just mentioned, it is a political appointment. What was it that you feel you had most in common with President Obama that perhaps you feel led him to choose you for this position?
Well, I was really impressed with his integrity and that he is a man who is always working in the public interest. I actually had the honor of being at a White House reception this past Monday. He was thanking his longest-serving appointees, and he made the point that there was not one ethics scandal on his watch, which is highly unusual, but not surprising, given the high moral standard of his administration. And I just want to say I was able to bring my son, and it was just such an honor to be in the White House with our first African-American president on Martin Luther King Day. And it just felt historic. It felt like the end of an era. And I really did not work on Obama's campaign. I was just so excited when he was elected that he was going to do great things for this country. And I'm so fortunate to have played a very small role in being part of his administration, where every single day we came to work with the commitment of doing what's right for the people, not really influenced by political pressure or fiscal pressures, but what does the law say? How do we enforce the law, and how do we get the most good for the most people? And, you know, that is a very relevant principle when you're dealing with issues like clean air and clean water and toxic legacies that unfortunately still plague Western New York and many other parts of the nation.
Now, your territory covers New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, some rather widespread and some rather diverse territories. Tell me about the challenges about covering such a widespread swath.
And also 8 Indian nations in New York. Well, it felt like I had two different regions, New York and New Jersey, and those issues were very familiar to me because I worked in the field of environmental protection out of Albany for decades. And then the Caribbean was really interesting. Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, I had to learn those issues, meet the players. Puerto Rico is really, really facing serious economic decline. So being an environmental regulator in that economic climate was challenging. And at the same time, it's such a pristine and ecologically sensitive area. The coastal areas of Puerto Rico, the mountains of Puerto Rico, the bioluminescent bay on Vieques, the El Yunque National Rainforest are just extraordinary. So the stakes are really high. And, you know, what I've said to numerous elected officials in Puerto Rico is when you're going through a period of economic decline, it's still important to stay focused on environmental protection. So Puerto Rico will always have a special place in my heart, and there's a nice connection between New York City and Puerto Rico. There's a million Puerto Ricans that live in New York City. So it is kind of an odd configuration for Region 2. No one really knows why it's like that, but I'm sure happy that I had the opportunity to do that work.
closer to home here in Western New York. When people think of environmental issues, you know, the legacy of Love Canal comes to mind. But you've also got the remnants of the Cold War, of radioactive materials, radioactive wastes that were left behind as part of the Cold War effort. More recently, we saw the Tonawanda Coke case go to federal court, mm-hmm. and that company was brought to justice. On your watch at the EPA, what would you say was the biggest challenge environmentally facing Western New York?
Tonawanda Coke, without doubt. And I'm really proud of the work that EPA and the state of New York did back in 2009. When I started at EPA, we did a bunch of inspections at the facility, and we learned a lot from the local residents who were breathing in the dirty air and the incredible community organizing that was done by the Clean Air Coalition of Western New York and other organizations in Western New York, everyone from Aaron Heaney to Rebecca Newberry and Jackie James Creedon and others, who sounded the alarm, who relied on citizen science, and who educated regulators about how serious the problems were. The air monitoring we did showed benzene levels, benzene being a carcinogen, that were 75 times higher than what federal and state guidelines would allow. So we brought a series of enforcement actions. In March of 2014, Tonawanda Coke Corporation received an air pollution fine from EPA of $12.5 million, one of the largest air pollution fines ever given at a federal criminal trial. The environmental manager was sentenced to jail. And most importantly, the benzene emissions have been cut by about 90%. So I think the way we approached the Tonawanda Coke issue is illustrative of why it's so important to have a strong EPA and why we need an environmental cop on the beat, because there are public health consequences when you do not aggressively enforce the Clean Air Act. And then I think, you know, the second response would be the work that EPA has done to protect the Great Lakes is so important. And I think there's been good progress. We're not done for sure. President Obama put a lot of money into protecting the Great Lakes. EPA provided $1.6 billion to fund Great Lakes projects through the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which was a real priority for the president throughout the Great Lakes region. We've dealt with contaminated sites in the city of Buffalo. We've done some habitat restoration. We awarded the town of Evans with almost $200,000 to fund green infrastructure projects to improve water quality in Lake Erie. And a lot of this was done in partnership with the community, and I cannot say enough good things about the Buffalo Niagara Riverkeeper. They are boots on the ground going out every single day in Western New York working to improve water quality and wetlands and habitat in the Great Lakes. And I think Western New York is really fortunate to have leadership from UB and nonprofit organizations and green businesses that are very willing to work in partnership with government to find solutions to some of these really, really daunting problems.
Every president, when they complete their term and they leave the White House, would like to have their legacy established. What do you think is the most important thing that people should remember the Obama administration for in terms of environmental legacy?
Climate change, without a doubt. This was the first president to take this on so aggressively and bring the international community along. And while we worry about the president's climate change legacy on things like EPA's Clean Power Plan regulations, which may not be continued, I think the horse is out of the barn, and the international community is really focused on how incredibly serious the climate change issue is. Last year was the hottest year on record. of the last 17 years, 16 of them were the hottest year on records. It seems like almost every day we read new scientific reports about sea level rise, about hurricanes being more violent than they would have been if not for warmer ocean temperatures. I'm always amused when I do public speaking and someone asks me if I believe in climate change, as if that's a theological proposition. You don't believe in climate change, you follow the science. And in fact, 98% of scientists conclude that climate change is real and that it is largely due to human activities, burning fossil fuel and burning forests and other human activities. And so saying that you don't believe in climate change is like saying you don't believe in gravity. It is just a fact, and it's so important that we not lose 4 years of leadership on this issue. I think President Obama has really distinguished himself, not only in pushing EPA hard, but also other federal agencies who have an important role to play in providing funding for investments in clean renewable energy projects like wind and solar, and pushing hard on energy efficiency and making sure that mass transit systems are funded and sustainable agriculture thrives. So, you know, the thing about climate change is there's not one silver bullet. There's literally hundreds of things that government can and should do to reverse the trend. And it remains to be seen how this is going to be approached in the new administration. But whatever that approach is, you know, I think you just can't deny the science of climate change, and so we're going to have to keep working hard and work for progress.
And yet the nominee to lead the Environmental Protection Agency is questioning the science and questioning the impact that climate change has. This, of course, is Attorney General Scott Pruitt of the state of Oklahoma. He is also criticizing the EPA, suggesting that it's overreaching, perhaps overregulating. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's up to the Senate to decide what to do with that nomination. But I can tell you from being at EPA for the past 7-plus years, we do not overreach. I think we should be doing more in terms of protecting public health and the environment. And it is surprising to have a nominee head such an important agency who is not well informed on the science of climate change. And allow me to be an optimist for 30 seconds and say that perhaps when he arrives at EPA, if indeed he is approved by the Senate, he will take his time and sit down and be briefed by EPA scientists, who are some of the best in the world, and simply look at the data. It is just so compelling. It's not even close. You know, I noted this scientific report. I've read that 98% of scientists agree that climate change is real, and it's caused largely by humans. And you know, most scientists don't agree on a lot. They're competing with each other for funding. You know, by definition, scientists who I love are kind of an ornery group. And to get that strong consensus from the scientific community is very unique. And let us just hope, and I might add pray, let us pray that whoever is leading the EPA will really focus on the science and not only inform himself, but inform his entire administration that this is no time to be questioning whether the science is real. This is the time to be taking strong action based on the science.
Now, you've got another gig lined up. You're heading to Pace University.
Yes, I'm very excited. I will be the Elizabeth Hobb School of Law visiting scholar at Pace University in White Plains. Pace University Law School is in the top five nationwide for environmental law. I've always known them to be an outstanding law school that provides the environmental law community with very talented environmental lawyers, many who currently work at EPA. So this is one of the best environmental law schools in the country. I will be spending the next semester working with the students, working with the faculty, doing some writing, doing some speaking out on the importance of environmental protection and the importance of a strong EPA. And I think we are at a moment in time where we need a new generation of environmental lawyers that are energetic and smart and really ready to go to work to protect the environment, both at the local level and the national level.
Judith Enck, the regional administrator of Region 2 for the Environmental Protection Agency, wrapping up a term under the Obama administration. Any final thoughts?
Well, just that it's imperative that residents of Western New York stay really informed on environmental issues and really engaged and talk to their elected officials and support each other, because it's hard to think of a region in the whole country that has more at stake in terms of environmental protection and public health protection. So I'm a big believer in when the people lead, the leaders will follow. And I think that can guide some future work in Western New York. It's been a real privilege to work with elected officials and businesses and nonprofit and foundation leaders in Western New York. There's a wonderful civic infrastructure there to make sure that these issues continue to be a priority.
Judith, we appreciate your time and good luck to you.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Thank you so much for your time.